This episode is sponsored in part by Boost Commerce. Imagine a search bar that's actually smart, one that helps your customers find what they're looking for without frustration. That's what Boost AI Search and Filter is all about. It's like giving your store a personal shopper right in the search bar. With Boost, shoppers can filter by everything from size to rating, so finding that perfect product is easy. And the frequently bought together and related items recommendations are tailored to your store, giving customers a reason to add more to their carts. Boost even lets you spotlight bestsellers or new arrivals using powerful merchandising tools. No coding skills needed. And if you ever do need support, their dedicated team has your back. Ready to make your store smarter? New customers can use the code KURT, that's K-U-R-T, to get 30% off for their first 6 months. Head to the Shopify App Store, start your 14-day free trial of Boost AI Search and Filter today. Welcome back to the unofficial Shopify podcast. I'm your host, Kurt Elster.
Jack Nasty.
And previously on the show, we heard about my jaunt to Colorado for Smart Marketer Live. And I met a lot of interesting entrepreneurs, e-commerce merchants, marketers there. And one of them who was in that episode was Devin Merklin. And talking to him, he's a young guy who's had quite the e-commerce career and interesting experience already, having helped Living Good Daily grow to 70 million annual before leaving to start his own brands. And now he's like on his third, fourth venture. All kinds of interesting experience from this gentleman. And I want to hear about it. We're going to dig deep and figure out what has worked for him that you can apply to your own business and maybe what hasn't worked or should be avoided. Devin, thank you for joining us. Welcome back.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, Kurt.
My pleasure. All right. So I want to know, how'd you first get attracted to e-commerce? What's the thing? What's going on there?
Yeah. Back in college, I was never really a good student. I'd always try and game the system and look at the syllabus and just try and figure out what is the highest weighted thing I should be doing to get the grade that I needed to just get through the class. Really the thing that I was interested in was just getting through the classes, because I always viewed school as like, hey, this is just temporary. And I don't think the things that I'm learning here are going to directly apply for what I want to do. Maybe if I was becoming an engineer, it'd make more sense, or like a scientist, it'd make more sense. But I was always interested in business. I had a grandmother that was a CFO and an accountant. I did not want to become an accountant. That is extremely boring. So I kind of, navigated business and figured I want to be in marketing. That seems fun. And it seems like it's always going to be something. So the things that I was learning in college didn't directly apply essentially to what I wanted to do. So I'll just try and get through it as fast as possible. Outside of the classroom, I started to dig into entrepreneurship a little bit by looking at I guess he would be considered an influencer, but a CEO named Randall Pitch, who owned a apparel company called Live Fit Apparel, which is all like lifestyle apparel. And I think it's still around. But I was really just fascinated by him. His kind of like style and his ethos kind of matched my own at the time. And he was kind of the first person that I watched that was doing the entrepreneur stuff and building the business. And I decided, hey, I want to do that. I don't know what like marketing jobs are outside of college, but what he's doing is super cool, super interesting, super free. And so I'm going to start an apparel company that's kind of around that. So outside of the classroom, that's where I kind of began, is figuring out how to build a e-commerce apparel brand.
What platform was this on?
This was on Wix. Yeah.
Where's my ew button?
Ew.
When did you find Shopify? When did you get religion?
Oh my gosh. I knew of Shopify at the time, but I was on college budget. So I was like, I need the cheapest software that I can find. And we would make the t-shirts in our student apartment and then ship them out. And it wasn't until we got a little bit more wiser. There's that print on demand software called Printful. Then right. we'd get the orders in through Wix, and then we'd take all the orders and then upload them into Printful, because they didn't have a direct integration.
I was going to say, Shopify just integrates with Printful.
Yeah, exactly. It's so easy now.
Just do it on autopilot.
Yeah, that's how we went about it.
So, okay. And this apparel brand, what was the name of this?
This was Merky's Apparel.
Merky's as in Devin Merklin?
Yeah, so it was a mixture of my last name, and then my cousin is actually Poopies from Jackass 4. And
so your cousin is Poopies?
Yep, Poopy.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
One, Sean Mack.
No follow-up.
there's a total, there's a story to his name, but it probably,
I'm sure there is.
Yeah, it's a good one. But I flew out to California as probably the summer before I decided to start the brand. And I was young. I was just really infatuated by his lifestyle. At the time he was on a show called Who Is Job, Who Is J-O-B, Jamie O'Brien, professional surfer. And, you know, star, whatever it is, star power. He walks around and it's like, whoa, he's doing these big things. And so I was intrigued, and he always talked about lifestyle and he looked so free. And I'm like, okay, that's what I want the brand to be. Mixture of my last name, Poopies, so Murkies. It's going to be a lifestyle brand that's all about, you know, free and doing your own thing.
Those are good businesses to learn with, though. I mean, that was my first entrepreneurial venture, was selling t-shirts I made in a dorm room on eBay. It was before Shopify was even around. So after you leave college and you're like, Murkies was cool, I learned a lot, but not going to continue with it. Where do you go from there?
Yeah, I do whatever any other college student would do. You start looking for jobs. I applied to 87 different jobs. It was all through like Indeed. I don't think I did any on LinkedIn, but other kind of softwares like that had 87 different applications and cover letters and all that kind of stuff. And I heard back from three. One was a unpaid internship. The other was a crawl space company out of Charlotte, North Carolina, that needed a marketing associate to kind of like record testimonial videos of their customers.
And then record them in the crawl space though, right?
I hope not. That would be terrible. It just did not seem fun, but I was like, okay, I guess this is what, you know, you go to work your way up the ladder type thing. And then the third one was an individual named Blake, Dr. Blake Livinggood. And he was looking to bring his brick and mortar practice online. And he needed kind of like a young marketer to help him figure it out. And the very first sentence of that kind of like job posting was, "This is not a job," and that spoke to me because I was like,
"Did it say job?"
Yeah, it said this.
I would be so suspicious of that. Yeah. If somebody came and like, "All right, I got this job posting, but this is not a job," I'd be like, "So you don't pay, right?" Like, is that?
Yeah.
Like, what about it? Did it make it not a job?
So I did some research. Obviously, Dr. Livinggood. It's kind of suspicious.
Yeah. No, there's no way that's a real name.
Yeah. A totally real name. He's got a brother, also a doctor. He's got, I don't even know, he's got multiple like clinics and things like that. But this Dr. Livinggood went a different route. But when I was doing some research, he had a website on Kajabi that he built himself. And he had this video. And I think this video is still out there today. It's him driving. It's the perfect like emotional VSL. He's like driving in the rain. Somebody's recording him from the passenger seat.
VSL, video sales letter?
Exactly.
Okay.
And he's just talking about just his life, his story, what he's went through and what he wants to do for the world. And I'm like, oh, that spoke to me. Because he was on a mission. It was very mission-driven what he was going after. And I told him this later, but, you know, things progressed and I ended up getting the position as like employee number one. I told him, hey, I would have worked for you for free. Obviously I didn't say that, you know, during the initial interviews, but after watching that,
not a good negotiation tactic.
No, not at all.
And at Livinggood, this is the brand that you grew to 70 million annual revenue, right? How? Is it like this brand didn't exist when you showed up, or he had started it, but it like wasn't, you know, what it became?
I think at the time he had his own practice for about 8 years. And then January of 2018, I believe, is when he started going after this Livinggood Daily side, which is supposed to be all online. And he started with his own book. And so he kind of wrote a book about just, you know, real health. It's like a 21-day game plan to get health like naturally. And it also tells his story as well. But he started that in January 2018. I think that was about when I applied. But when I walked across that graduation stage, barely, May of 2018, the very next day is when I started. So the thing that he had for about, you know, 5-6 months was that book. And he was just trying to figure out how to sell that book.
From the book, I'm guessing we end up at supplements.
We do. So in his clinic, in his practice, he had all of these private label supplements from, I think, the manufacturer or the the company is called Designs for Health. Like, I think you can really only sell their products. They're really high quality. You can only sell their products if you're like a licensed doctor. So he private labeled them, and he was selling them in his clinic. And he wanted to start this book and go down this real health journey. And then he also had, I think around that time, we built that Shopify store out so he could sell those private label products on his Shopify store. But what we were trying to figure out was, how do you do that? How do you get customers online to go to your store and purchase things?
And yeah, that turns out that's the hard part.
Yeah, yeah. It's always the vision, the fun stuff, the brand. And then you have to put pen to paper and say, how the heck do I sell all this?
How do we get anybody to care?
Yeah.
So how did you get anybody to care?
So we come from that direct response-y world, like the ClickFunnels and all of that. And if you're familiar with ClickFunnels, you're familiar with Russell Brunson. And one of the things...
He's a polarizing figure now.
He is. I think he's doing more than just ClickFunnels stuff nowadays, but he's really starting to become a kind of a really good, you know, just business influencer, a good marketer. It's a lot different than what he was back in like 2015 to 2018, where he was just trying to sell. But he had these book funnels. It was get this book that he created. He has multiple now, but get this book for free. Just cover the shipping and handling.
Free plus shipping. And I'm familiar with this funnel because I bought two of his books, free plus shipping. Audience building that was largely about where he took like strategies from cults, you know, and made it more positive. But I thought that was fairly interesting.
It was maybe 2018 or 2019, the Funnel Hackers Live, the big live event that they put on where they were talking about that. And I remember sitting in the stands just thinking, it actually ended up becoming a big piece of Living It Daily. But I remember sitting in the stands thinking, marketing is all just psychology and it pulls from the weirdest places.
And what's interesting about it is like it's very cyclical, right? Yeah. Like you could go back and read Dale Carnegie's How to Win Friends and Influence People, you know, a book published 100 years ago, and you're going to see theory and practice and ideas in that you'll recognize getting recycled into other things. And like, it just keeps going. The snake's just eating its own tail in marketing books forever. But it works. I mean, because some of these things you're right, it's psychology. And those things are universal and don't change quite as much over time.
Well, actually, that book funnel is a huge psychology play. So the way it, from a 30,000 foot view, the way Living It Daily looks, and I'm not divulging any secrets here. It's you see this in every business. Every successful business, just look at it. You'll see these things. It's they've got a front end and they've got a back end. Let's simplify it that way. That front end is designed to do what I describe as three things, and you can put different words. Smart Marketers does this amazingly. I call it IAS, information, the application of information, supplementation. Everybody's looking for information. Information's everywhere. To do something, to fix something, to solve a problem. And the fact that they get the information from you is a foot in the door. If we had to look at a trust meter from like 0 to 100, you could consider information like 5% of that 100%. Then is the application of information. If you can then take that person that gathered that information from you and help them apply the information and get a result out of it, they're going to have immense trust with you. So that 5% goes to something like 60 or 70%. And then a supplementation. Now that you have them, they trust you a little bit more. You just want to keep them going. How do you keep them going? You constantly give them products or courses or teachings or things along those lines. So that book funnel was actually just grab this free book, get this information. The next steps in that funnel was like an immediate kind of like what a view of what I just described. The very next step was join the Lifestyle Challenge, which is a 30-day kind of thing that teaches you everything in the book. It teaches you how to get healthy. People are losing weight. They're coming off medications. They're building immense trust with us because they've tried a million other things, but now they just got this result with us, so they trust us. Then the very next step is, hey, grab these supplements. They're going to help you throughout the challenge, and that's the supplementation fee. Now they're taking products that we serve on a monthly or a daily basis. And now we've got a really strong customer. It was all just really a psychology play of just taking somebody from not knowing us at all to really building trust with them and then essentially keeping them fed, supplementing their lifestyle over time.
Ever wake up to customers canceling orders? Maybe they said, I shouldn't shop when I'm high. This was a gift. We broke up. Those are all real customer quotes. And they're all a real hassle for your customer and you. Why should the customer have to ask you to edit their order for them? What if they could do it themselves? Enter Cleverific. With Cleverific, you can empower your customers to make their own changes through a self-service portal. Cleverific is designed to reduce customer support tickets, ship orders faster, and even reduce returns and lost packages. Don't just take our word for it. Menswear retailer Peter Manning New York cut their order support queries by 99% with Cleverific, and they're not alone. Exclusively, for listeners of the Unofficial Shopify podcast, get 50% off Cleverific's Pro plan, now just $49 a month, giving you full access to everything Cleverific has to offer. Just go to cleverific.com/unofficial and use the promo code KURT50, that's KRUT50, at checkout to claim your discount. Take control with Cleverific and watch your customer support tickets plummet, shipping speeds increase, and package returns decrease. And all of that means happier customers. Okay, you know, when you break it down, it sounds, well, you make it sound easy. But of course, the hard part was coming up with the strategy, and then the plan, then the individual pieces of content, creating it, putting it all together. There's a lot of work there.
Yeah.
And so this all ends up on these long sales pages, these direct response pages. And then that idea gets them, they opt into a marketing funnel, and then finally they end up on, you know, a product detail page days, weeks, potentially later, right, from that initial contact point. It's not like they visit the site and immediately buy. I think that's the thing that people miss, is like there is this long process of nurturing that goes on, right?
That's one strategy. And a lot of e-commerce brands do that, where they take you through that really long form sales letter, and then they're trying to get you, you know, 3 days, 7 days, 30 days down the road. I would say that we're probably pretty impatient, and so we didn't like that strategy. So that book funnel, the reason that we liked that so much, and that was our bread and butter, is because we could take somebody and get them to convert almost immediately, rather than having a longer time cycle. So once they converted, now they're on to the next step. Try the lifestyle. Now they're on to the next step. Try the supplements. And if I had to kind of like try and remember these numbers here, it's probably an 8% conversion on that landing page for that free book plus ship. Then the very next step for joining the lifestyle, and there's a few different upsells and downsells with that, but if I combine them together, it's probably about 15 to 20% of people that purchased that book would then join that challenge. And then it was maybe 3% of people that would grab the supplements. So with that one funnel, we then created multiple funnels off of that that would then speak to those customers that would drop off. So if they didn't grab the book, we have obviously retargeting ads that would send you the book. If they didn't grab lifestyle, retargeting ads that would send you the lifestyle, and then so on and so forth.
So it keeps them in the funnel, keeps you top of mind, and ideally maximizes that conversion rate, that average customer lifetime value. It's, you know, hearing it from, you know, the post-mortem perspective, it's like, oh, well, so this all seems so obvious. Of course, that's how we should do it, right? But it's harder than that, because the catch is you got to figure out the offer, and you're probably not going to get it right on the first go. And so there's a lot of trial and error, and a lot of just try when you're trying to get the first one out there, a lot of just searching in the dark until you get a result. And I think that's the frustrating and hard part.
Yeah. Kurt, that entire process took 2.5 years to figure out. And we were, we were a product of the, I guess you could consider us the COVID boom babies. We're just in the right place at the right time. So 2.5 years, we're trying to figure out that offer and that funnel. COVID happens. Everybody's looking for health solutions. We're able to 10X within 30 days because of that, and then ride that growth through on over the next few years. But it did take us a while to figure out that offer and figure out all the structure of that business, because I'm making it sound simple right now, but it's really just testing after testing. That was it for 2.5 years until we found something that was, what's good.
That, I'm glad you say that, because 30 months of, and it's not like that's free, you know, Dr. Living Good, which I still refuse its real name, had to employ you during that time, right? While you're figuring it out, and then you're spending on resources and ads to figure it out along the way. So for a brand that's in that position now, that's just starting out, that needs to figure these things out with their marketing, what advice would you give them?
Oh my gosh. Test and spend. Like even when that offer was looking bad and we were having or a free book, you know, we were doing really good. If we had a new customer cost per acquisition of like $25, even when that customer cost per acquisition was like $40, we had to continue to spend and test and figure things out. I think that's the only way we got through it. A lot of brands, like, they hear this stuff and we'll get some people through the door, some brands through the door, and they're expecting like immediate results. Like if I knew everything about your brand and knew all this stuff, why would I be doing it for everybody else? It's about figuring it out and testing and figuring what's going to work for you. And honestly, like, some brands figure it out right away and they have an offer. Like, there's one brand right now, they're in like the small pet space. And we figured out their offer within, it was less than 30 days. But now the problem is, it's really hard to scale. So we need to figure out all the other pieces to it. And there's other brands where we're still testing offers. It's been 3 months and we're still cycling through offers to figure out what's going to convert the best and bring the most favorable numbers. So if I had to give any advice to anybody, it's just test, 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 test. And don't stop testing until you get some really favorable numbers.
It's straightforward, but how do you get the initial ideas? How do you come up with that initial plan? I mean, do you follow is there a template you follow? Some methodology, a framework perhaps?
Yeah, there's two methods. One is, if you're a new brand, go copy somebody else. Don't steal everything that they have, but like, we did this a lot. There's a brand called B-Shred. Vince Sant is the influencer. I don't know how big they are. They're a huge supplement brand. And we just looked at what they were running because they're doing a lot more revenue than us. They have a lot more ad spend than us. So they probably put a lot more effort into figuring out if this offer works or not. And so we would look at what they did. And they're similar to us, just in a different niche. And we would essentially copy it, get it as close as possible without, you know, infringing on anything copywritten or anything like that. And we'd put it in our own language, our own branding. And the way we'd go about that is, like, we would take out our credit card and go through their entire sales process. We'd look at, who are they using for support? How many emails do they send? How many text messages do they send? What's the pricing on their offers? Like, and then we would just go copy it and see if it works for us. And we'd make some tweaks to see if we can get it. And if we can't get it, all right, shelve it, go to the next one. Then for brands that are a little bit more established and know their audience, it's figuring out, what problems does your audience have? And can you provide an easy solution that they can get a result with, right? And there's luxury brands out there that's not really a thing. I try and stay away from those. I don't know how to speak to them. But for the brands that are out there building a business, building a product that solves a problem, then really speak to that problem. And don't be afraid to twist the knife a little bit. Because
I agitate the pain.
Exactly. I always looked at it as, if I don't get you to take out your wallet, then I'm not going to be able to change your life. And that's 100% true, because a lot of people will just take things for granted and not go through the process. But if I can get you to make some kind of commitment to me, like, we hold money dearly, if you make some kind of commitment to me, then I know you're going to go through with it. And so I just got to figure out how to twist that knife a little bit, make you actually feel that pain, and then make that commitment. So then you can solve that problem. Because we're just
farmers. You'd mentioned, you know, sometimes you start working with a brand and they expect immediate results. What are some of the other misconceptions people have?
A lot of the other misconceptions come from e-commerce brands that hear about this direct response space and then want to jump right into the direct response space. Honestly, there's some brands out there that you just need to stay away from it. You're focused too much on your branding and how things look, the color and the radius of the corners of a button, that you're not built for the direct response space. The direct response space is fast, loud, dirty. Like, we're trying to get the conversion at the end of the day. And there's some brands out there that I've talked to that, oh my gosh, this company is running this offer and they're doing it this way. And I just look at their brand, I'm like, you guys aren't built for that. Like, that it's just not for you guys. It's not what you're doing. You're going to win, like, following more of a model that's within branding rather than direct response. So that's probably another thing that...
For you, what excludes someone from being a good fit for a direct response sales funnel?
Honestly?
Is too pretty the answer?
No, it's not too pretty. If they're too... They're not as willing to take big risk and move quick. You got to move really quick. We throw something up and, you know, it could be a beautiful landing page and a funnel. I've got zero attachments to that stuff now after going through what I went through over the years. And you might be really tied to it. And you're like, oh, I got to get this to work. And the numbers just don't work. We got to tear it down and forget about it and go on to the next thing. And there's been a lot of brands that I've seen that are just, they're attached to the way something looks or the way something feels or what they think it could do. You got to tear it down and move on to the next thing. It's all about speed.
So you've been doing this since pre-pandemic. Are there any tactics you think don't work like they used to?
Yeah, I think webinars and masterclasses are starting to die down a little bit. We had a lot of success with what we would call masterclass and webinars and docuseries and things like that. Where I don't think, depending on the audience out there, if it's a younger demographic, probably 55 and below, those don't work as well as they used to, obviously. I think introductions of like TikTok and YouTube Reels and all that kind of stuff, or YouTube Shorts, sorry, and all that kind of stuff has kind of hurt that strategy. Just because we're all about quickness now. We want to scroll through and see that kind of content. I think it is starting to take a turn, like we said earlier, like it's cyclical and people are paying attention more to longer form content. But as of right now, I haven't seen it work. But maybe, you know, a year from now, 2 years from now, when it comes back around, it'll be a thing again.
Yeah, I think current, you're right. Just attendance rates on webinars where I have been a guest, you're seeing them just go down. It's because everybody like sign up just so they get the link to the replay later.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yep. And then when I have the replay, well, I'm probably not even going to watch it. And so the webinar is tough. It's just, it's different now.
Yeah.
It's less video became table stakes as opposed to like live video was a much more attractive thing in the past. Now it's just not unusual. So you're no longer with Living Good Daily. You left. It sounded like you had a good thing going. Why leave?
Well, you know, I started out in college being really interested in entrepreneurship. And honestly, the reason I stayed with Living Good Daily for so long, I think it was 6-7 years. I stayed with them for so long is because I was an entrepreneur. I was employee number one. I got to, you know, pioneer all this stuff, figure out the strategies, test, blow stuff up, have some wins, et cetera. Like I felt all that as if I was an entrepreneur. And as we started to grow, things need to get more corporate. They need to get more structured. It's just the name of the game. And you can try and hold on to that early stages entrepreneurship feel for so long. But if you really want to systematize things, you got to go a little bit more towards the corporate side. And, you know, As I was young, I never saw myself as just being, you know, just an employee or something along those lines. And I don't think I was viewed as that, but it was an internal battle that I felt because I would do these like smaller ventures while we're building Living Good Daily. And I got immense joy of like being in the weeds and figuring stuff out and growing the thing that when January this past year came around, I kind of had to make a decision. Because we were looking to grow a lot more. Maybe they did 100 million this year. Who knows? I know we're pacing 70. And I knew what it would take in order to do that. And it would take a lot more structure, a lot more kind of systems and things like that. And I didn't see myself and what I wanted out of life within Living Good Daily. I wanted to go do the entrepreneurship, like go find the unknown and figure stuff out. And so I had to make a rough decision of, do I stay here? I love everybody that's a part of this company. I've got zero bad blood with anybody. I love what we're doing for the world. Or do I take this wild risk and go figure stuff out all over again?
Where'd you go from there? What are you working on now? What were you working on in between? I mean, you started in 2018. It's only...
Yeah, well, while we were building that, I had like multiple ventures throughout the period. There's one point in time where we're like a year into living at Daily. I think it was our first year. We did like 250K in revenue, nothing spectacular. And I went off and started my own supplement brand. And then I met with Dr. Living Good and we're like, okay, that's a little weird. It's kind of like a competitor. Let's shelve that. So I shelved that. And then I found an influencer that had his own kind of like e-commerce store where he was selling t-shirts. And he was a YouTuber. And he was showing people how to modify their car. And every now and then he'd do t-shirt drops and he would drive traffic. So they'd go buy t-shirts. I think the most he was doing was maybe like 40K, 45K in a year. And this is when we really started to hit some scale. And I started to get a little bit more free time for myself at Living Good Daily. And I wanted to take something that I'm really passionate about, like hobby-wise being cars, and kind of turn that into business. And so I reached out to him. I said, hey, can I help you with this e-commerce thing? He's like, yeah. And just send me all the passwords and stuff. And so I like ran a mini like Black Friday, Cyber Monday sale, got a little success. I think instead of doing a $3,000 month, he did like a $4,500 month. And then December, I saw a lot of these brands popping up doing these car giveaways. I'm really interested in that. And I'm like, hey, let's do something extremely niche to really test and see if this is like a good idea. So he had this exhaust that was on his car. And I'm like, okay, let's see if we can give that thing away. Like, let's see if there's...
What was the car?
It was a 2016 Volkswagen GTI.
Okay. Yeah, if the people who are into Volkswagens will be very excited about this. But again, it's like, you have to be into cars. You have to be into this specific car. You have to own this specific car. And then you have to want this exhaust. So that you really... really laser focus that offer.
It's super niche. I was like, okay, there's not a lot of risk here. You don't have to go buy a car or anything. You're just pulling it off your car and it's used. So like less people want it.
So you're going to go, when you rephrase it as, hey, we're giving away my used muffler, less attractive.
It's like, oh, okay, no, I don't want that.
This thing better be titanium and custom.
Yeah, I think it was, I won't remember the brand right now. It's a solid brand. But we ran a giveaway model where, you know, it's one of those things where you purchase more, you get more entries into the giveaway.
Yeah, it works like a raffle.
Yeah, yeah. It did extremely well.
We've run a whole bunch of them for several brands, but maybe for Hoonigan, they've given away at least 10 cars, and I got to see it. It quite incredible. But when it's like, hey, buy a t-shirt, you get a chance to win a car, that's pretty, it's an attractive offer.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, why not? I need a t-shirt anyways.
And was that on Shopify?
That was on Shopify. Yep.
Did you use any special software for it?
Viral Sweeps.
That's what we used on Hoonigan for this giveaway. We used Viral Sweep. That's a good one.
We copied Hoonigan for one of ours. We saw what you guys were doing. I forget which giveaway it was. Yeah, we tried to lay the store out and the collection page out just like Hoonigan.
I'm proud.
Yeah.
I've managed that store since 2017. Still manage it.
But we tested out that giveaway thing and it doubled revenue for December, which is like a pretty solid.
Yeah, doubled. I'll take it.
And then January, what I unknowingly did, and I think we all do this as marketers, is like we have a good idea and the idea works. And then you blow up operations. Blew up operations because he was shipping out all of the inventory from his barn. And then we took January to move everything to Printful version 2 now. And that way he didn't have to fulfill these orders and he could just focus on the content.
Hopefully we're finally on Shopify instead of Wix.
We're on Shopify now.
The unofficial Shopify podcast is sponsored in part by Zipify. And they've got the ugly truth about direct-to-consumer sales to share with you. And spoiler, it's really ugly. 82% of the people who buy from your store once will never buy from you again. And there's nothing you could do to win them back. That's why you need to get as much revenue as you can from each order. And that's where OneClick Upsell comes in. OneClick Upsell is a Shopify app that offers your customer upsells and cross-sells with every purchase. And it can increase your average order value by 15%. With OneClick Upsell, you can add AI-powered upsell funnels to every product on your store in just 3 clicks, including your product pages, shopping cart, checkout, thank you page, and even on the shop app. So you earn extra revenue automatically. OneClick Upsell is already the number one choice for 15,000 Shopify stores. And guess what? It's made merchants like you an extra $750 million. So don't miss out on another dollar in free upsell revenue. Try one-click upsell today and start making 10 to 15% more from every customer today. Go to Zipify.com/Kurt to start your 30-day free trial. That's Zipify.com/KURT.
That following month, February, I forget which year, he bought a car. Like, it was an old Mazda 3 Speed for like $4,000. It was like $3,800 to be exact. And then we launched our first car giveaway. And that month we did, so the previous month, January or December, we did about $8,000. January, we did $3,000. February, we did $35,000 in revenue. It's awesome for going from $3,000 to $35,000. I was like, oh, we're on to something. And so we kind of kept that pace going, selling t-shirts and stuff like that. Eventually we get into automotive parts, things of that nature. And that was kind of something that I was doing like on the side, just for fun while we're growing, Living It Daily. And that was kind of like one venture that was just kind of in motion. And then when I decided to leave Living It Daily, I wanted to create an agency, more of like a growth, like scaling partner that was more revolved around doing exactly what I did for Dr. Living Good, exactly what I did for Cameron was his name, the owner of the brand, and kind of teach brands and companies these ways of scaling. It's less about, let me just work on your ads or let me just work on your email. It's more like, let's figure out the strategy. Let's build the funnels. Let's build the process to help you scale.
So few people actually do this. They don't realize that they don't have a funnel, but it's like they have a website, they have ads, they have emails, but those things just aren't, and they're branded, but they're not necessarily working together in a funnel. It doesn't have like a strategic path that you're supposed to move through it. That's the missing piece, right? And I think that the intimidation factor there is I have to make a landing page and I have to make content and I have to make a decision on like, this is the hero product that we are going to try to get people to buy initially. And you know, most brands don't sell a single product. And most brands have, you know, probably like 1 to 3 hero products in addition to the rest of the catalog. Or, you know, if you're in apparel, then you're like just cycling through stuff seasonally. And so there's all kinds of excuses you can make as to why you, yeah, that's great for Devin and Dr. Feelgood, but not, sorry, Dr. Living Good, but not me. My brand is special and different. You know, I can't do it. It won't work. And that's fine, but just accept that like you are leaving money on the table there by, because that the landing page, I swear, if you don't have landing pages for offers, promos, they'll still work, but it's just not going to be as optimized.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what we found too. When you take the time to build out, like even if you're not doing direct response stuff, right? If you take the time to build out just a landing page for the customer that you're trying to attract, it converts so much better than sending somebody to a product page. Because the very first thing we see on a product page is product image on the left, title, description, or however you have it laid out, price button, right?
I got the SKU in there.
Yeah, exactly. It's like when you build an actual landing page, a page devoted to the customer, you can say a lot more things and help them get over any kind of like barriers that they might feel before they have that initial scare from the price. I don't understand why we do this. Like the price is right there. Like that's usually people's first objection. It's like, oh, I don't want to spend that. It's like, let me walk you through a page a little bit. Maybe show you a video. And maybe kind of get you over that fear a little bit before you get the sticker shock.
I'm in my head, like I'm writing notes down because I'm like, man, I used to have a lead magnet. I used to have a funnel. I used to have marketing automation. And over time, I just started slowly taking it apart until I didn't even have it anymore. And I'm like, man, I got to do it again. And it was just because of the same problem everybody falls into. You're like, well, I'll do that later. Or like, well, I don't actually need that right now. And like, no, what the hell was I thinking?
There's definitely more fun with it. I think, you know, warm customers, hot customers, you know, they just want to buy the thing. They're used to it. They just want to buy the thing, and that's where the product page comes in. But cold people, it's like we just treat it as this cold interaction. Go to my product page, buy my thing, rather than...
buy or get out.
Yeah, exactly.
If somebody walked in your retail store and you're like, hey, buy or get out, it wouldn't work real well.
Exactly. It's like you want to create an experience. You want to build trust with that person and tell them why they should buy your product.
Well, because otherwise you'll have to get out. Yeah. I told you there's two options. Yeah, that is, you're right. When you just like plop someone into a product detail page, that is, essentially what's happening, as opposed to, you need someone to sell you, right? I'm saying, like, I'm here, but I need you to help me make that purchase decision. Otherwise, this isn't happening, right? Like, I will come to my senses and not make that purchase, you know, RoboCop t-shirt, whatever the heck I'm on. But, so you've worked in a range of niches, like auto parts. That's my bread and butter, right? But that aftermarket auto is really tough because it's very technical. And then supplements, tough because it's got a lot of regulation around it, right? Like, you don't want to offend the FDA, the FTC, et cetera. And so, having worked in multiple brands, I don't even know what my question is. Okay, compare and contrast, because just you went from supplement to auto. They're very different, but you clearly have a lot of experience in both.
Yeah, to be honest, I love supplement a lot more. And it was more than just supplement and auto. It was like Living It Daily was like 90% like female audience and female customers, where Karma Speed is the brand, and Offset, which is another, is like 90% male.
And, Offset, three Fs, right?
Yeah, exactly. And you could sell something multiple times over here with supplements. It's usually just one sale, one and done with auto parts, unless they need to buy more things from you. And that's usually not every 30 days. That's usually once every 6 months or so. The marketing opportunities on supplements is so much more. There's so many more creative things that you can do versus the auto industry. It's like you're selling somebody else's product. You're dictated by MAP. You can't really get as crazy with the funnels and the offers and things like that. It's just really hard to scale. It's what I found, at least, is like if you've got an influencer or some kind of audience that you could tap into, then you could get a share of that market. But other than that, it's like you're playing the same game as a bunch of other people. And it's hard to differentiate yourself without, you know, just niching down into like one, you know, type of vehicle or one, you know, make or model. So,
and then that's tough too, because like that can wax and wane, and like the number of those cars on the road can change, right? And then you're trying to guess as to what the next one's going to be. And product development, R&D for that is so expensive, and the liability. It's a ton of fun, and it is a difficult space to be in, automotive. We're coming to the end of our time together. I want some quick wins here. One piece of advice you'd give someone who is just launching their first Shopify store.
This is something that we spent a lot of time on, and I think it was extremely fruitful outside of other things like SEO that we spent way too much time on that really didn't apply to us, but was really getting a good understanding of who the heck are we selling to? Who the heck are we talking to? You hear this everywhere, like people talk about it, but I really want to put emphasis on it because I don't think people talk about it enough. But like, you need to actually feel who your customer is, the pain points that they have, why they would take out their wallet. What is the bank that they use? Like, you just really want to understand that person and how they work psychologically before you go build a Shopify store or a landing page. Because then who are you building it for? Who are you serving? Right? Then you're just putting stuff on a store. You're just selling things. If that's your thing, great, go do that. But if you're really trying to build a brand and, you know, build a business that's here for the long run, understand who the heck you're selling to and who you're serving at the end of the day.
And that is, it's impactful advice that until you have been through it and done it, you just won't appreciate.
Exactly.
It's like, I already know what they want. I know the customer. No, you don't. You don't. You know, consistently in the show, the thing I've noticed is like some of the successful brands that were bootstrapped start by going to local events, and they, without realizing, get this big leg up on other people at the beginning because they are talking face to face with the actual customer. And so they just have a much better sense, whether or not they're brilliant marketers, entrepreneur, whatever, they will always have a better sense of who their customer is because of that experience for the rest of the business career. And so I think you're right.
That is extremely, extremely powerful what you just said. And whoever's listening to this, go back, listen to it again and again and again. Because when we work with brands, we have ideas, we have strategies. They have worked in the past. Like, cool, we've got numbers. But if the founder says something, if that person says something, hey, I think we should try this instead, ears go up. We're listening. because there's something that a founder knows that whatever marketing strategist or expert thinks they know, the founder just knows better. And I learned this really well with Dr. Livinggood. He spent 8 years in a clinic, or 10 years in a clinic, listening to his ideal customer. And so there's just little words, little nuances that that person knows unconsciously that anybody else that comes into that business is just not going to know. And it's because they know their customers so well.
And so your current endeavor is Xscale. It's a consultancy. What does Xscale do for people?
So Xscale, essentially what it was is we fit in between, as it was, I'll get to the punchline. We fit in between one of the two most common kind of agency, marketing agencies. You've got advertising, which is your front end. You've got communications, which is your back end, email, SMS, things like that. The problem is that they don't talk to each other. And that's the kind of position I served at Livinggood Daily. It's like we had an agency for advertising. We had an agency for email. But the problem is that they're disjointed. They're all doing their own thing. And I sat in the middle and connected the two. And that's how we have a lot of success. And so we kind of serve as that piece for other brands. Is they have an agency, or maybe it's internal for email and for ads. And we want to come in between and be the strategist that connects everything together to help you scale up. So the reason I said that was is because that is extremely, extremely hard to scale. You need to have a lot of strategists in order to kind of, you know, that understand the game that we're playing here in order to kind of like make that work.
And how many Devins can you get, right? Like, you know everything. And so now you got to find junior people that you could coach up. It's not easy.
Yeah, it's not even that. It's just the it's just like the people that are just really good at like problem solving and understanding those things. I think there's a lot of skilled individuals out there that have a skill set in this area. Like, there's far better developers out there than me. There's far better marketers and whatever. It's just the strategy in between. It's really hard to scale that up and without it getting diluted over time. And so I said was because that was what I intended to do, and finding that it's hard to scale. Obviously it's hard. And the better route for me was I've been doing this for so long, or not compared to other people, but the thing that I enjoy most is actually getting in the weeds and figuring out how to grow this stuff. I don't want to be away from that and grow an agency. I'd rather grow brands. And so we're more dipping our toe into kind of like mergers and acquisitions, where we're buying these smaller e-commerce brands that are under-marketed, that are not doing, you know, proper strategies, and then implementing these strategies so we can grow them.
Have you bought one yet?
We are about to close a gut health brand in 7 days. Hopefully we're on time. It should be in 7 days.
So how are you finding these ideal candidate businesses to acquire?
Yeah, I'm simple. So, marketplaces like Flippa. What's the other one? Buybizonline.com. And
Empire, honestly, Flipper is probably a good one.
Yeah, yeah. I'm actually I see one of my emails popping up that I have a few newsletters from them. And then honestly, talking to other like business owners, like, hey, I've got this brand over here. Like, we have a client right now. He actually does the same thing. He buys these supplement brands. We help him grow them. But he reached out to me and said, hey, there's this guy over here that has this brand. He's thinking about selling or doing something with it. Would you be interested? So it's usually a good way to go about it. And you kind of look for under-marketed within that health and wellness space, because that's just what I feel like I'm qualified to know something about. And see, you know, just go down that route and see if we can do anything with it.
Also, like to note here, you're a car guy who got into, like, you've done engine swaps, you're like real deal car guy.
Yeah.
And got into aftermarket automotive as websites, and then went, you know what? I'm going back to supplements.
Yeah. It's so much more fun from a business and marketing perspective. I'll always hold like some kind of automotive piece to me when it comes to business. But, you know, when it comes to like business and marketing, supplements, health and wellness is the way to go for me.
Where can we go learn more about you, Devin Merklin?
Follow me on YouTube, LinkedIn. If you got a business to sell, go to thexscale.com. And what I really appreciate is when you go to these social platforms, like people tell you to go follow me on Instagram or whatever, is like, go there and comment some things that you think other people need to learn. It's not just about like...
you're gaming the algorithm. Yeah.
Not that at all. But seriously, it's like I see so much value. Ezra says this a lot. High tides raise all ships. There's so much more value if, you know, people are in the comments or they're, you know, doing spinoffs and saying things that benefit other people. Because I know when I go watch a video and maybe it's a strategy thing or a tactic, I'm also looking in the comments and I'm seeing what other people are saying. And I hate seeing the comments that are just negative or just don't, you know, contribute to the content at all. I'd rather like read the stuff that's like, oh, I didn't think about it that way. Or, hey, I've tried this. How about you try this in a different way? Because I'm selfishly going to go look at those comments and I'm going to take those strategies and apply them myself.
I like it. I like the approach. Devin Merklin, Xscale, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. It's a pleasure.
Crowdfunding campaigns are great. You can add social proof and urgency to your product pre-orders while reducing risk of failure. But with traditional crowdfunding platforms, you're paying high fees and giving away control, all while your campaign is lost in a sea of similar offers. It can be frustrating. That's why we built Crowdfunder, the Shopify app that turns your Shopify product pages into your own independent crowdfunding campaigns. We originally created Crowdfunder for our private clients, and it was so successful, we turned it into an app that anyone can use. Today, merchants using Crowdfunder have raised millions collectively. With Crowdfunder, you'll enjoy real-time tracking, full campaign control, and direct customer engagement. And it's part of the Built for Shopify program, so you know it's easy to use. So say goodbye to high fees and hello to successful store-based crowdfunding. Start your free trial and transform your Shopify store into a pre-order powerhouse today. Search Crowdfunder in the Shopify App Store to get started.